Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
He is the director of research at the HeartMath Institute. Dr. McCready is a psychophysiologist and researches in numerous studies that examine the effects of emotions on heart-brain interactions and its effect on the autonomic, cardiovascular, hormonal, and immune system function. He then uses this information to determine the benefits that positive emotions will have on those systems. Dr. McCready has been featured in a number of documentary films, including I Am, The Truth, The Power of the Heart, Solar Revolution, The Living Matrix, and others. And as I did the research to prepare for this, I saw that basically he is a brilliant man who uses his intelligence to help us better connect with ourselves, each other, and the world around us. And so, Doctor, I would like to say thank you very much for what you've done in your work, especially at this time right now.
Well, Bill, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. So I guess we'll just get started. I know we have a fairly short window here and we'll leave a little bit of time for some Q&A at the end, hopefully. So it seemed appropriate for this conference. I mean, there's so many things I could talk about to talk about our project, which is called GCI, our Global Coherence Initiative, but really the science behind that, although there's much more to it than just the science. So we talk a lot about coherence. And I thought it'd be good to start a little bit with, well, what is that? Most people have an intuitive understanding, you know, and if you look it up in the dictionary, the first definition is typically around some of the quality of somebody's speech. Or like, hopefully I'm putting my words together now in a way that convey a coherent meaning. And if I'd had a little bit too much to drink this morning and I'm muttering nonsense, you'd say I'm incoherent, right? But we use it a lot. It's used in physics, pretty much in every branch of science and physics you can think of, this concept of coherence. And it's almost always in the context of a complex system. And how well are those parts of a system cooperating in harmonious order or not? And for them to do that, there has to be some type of connection between them. So there's always some type of connectedness in a coherent system. And if it's a coherent system, it implies there's harmony amongst the parts, that there's stability, and it's a very efficient energy system. In other words, we're not wasting energy. And another, just I think, important concept that's just always embedded in the concept of coherence is that the sum of the parts of the system, there's something greater than the sum of the parts. Something that emerges that's greater than that. And you can't just break it down to its parts. So kind of a famous guy here, Ilya Prigogine, who actually demonstrated, I love this statement from his work, that when a system, a living system, usually he's talking about, but is far out of equilibrium, small islands of coherence in a sea of chaos have the capacity to lift the system into a higher order. I think that's really relevant for our times. And it's actually true on a chemical, physical level, wherever we want to talk about it. So our research spans about 30 years now in three primary domains: personal, social, and global. So if we're talking about personal coherence, it's really what's the harmonious activity within all the parts of the body? And this will, I'll very briefly kind of cover. We have some pretty neat ways of measuring that and developed a whole system to help us get into our personal coherence so we can feel better, perform at our best, and so on. And then in the social domain, coherence would have to do with how the harmony, if you will, or the connectedness and the collaboration, cooperation amongst the people in a team or a family or a community or a nation. And then globally, which is my main focus of today, we'll talk about the literal interconnectedness between humanity and the earth itself in ways that I think we'll find surprising. I'm not talking about internets and things here. I'm talking really about a much deeper level of connectedness at a more energetic level. So just kind of briefly here, personal coherence, the way at least I like to describe it and think of it is it's an optimal state where the mind and emotions are brought into alignment and in sync with the energetic heart's intuitive guidance. Hopefully that'll resonate with a lot of people, but physiologically, when we learn how to shift and increase the ratios of being in a coherent state, that creates a vast cascade of neurochemicals, biochemical events, activity in our brain and nervous system that really lift and benefit the entire body, but especially our mental and emotional stability, our ability to maintain our composure in the sea of chaos, if you will. And then socially, we will cover a little bit about how that actually reaches out and affects others. So I'm not going to go into a lot about the heart-brain communication, which is really the core of our work, what we're best known for kind of globally and stuff. When you put electrodes across the chest and measure the electrocardiogram, or we stick electrodes on your brain and measure brain waves, you're literally measuring current flow, electricity. And that's why it's called the electrocardiogram, after all. But whenever you have a flow of current, and the heart is by far the largest source of electrical current in the body, by far, you produce a magnetic field, which is kind of build a bridge to where I'm going to go here. And magnetic fields and electric fields are quite different, by the way. So I like to use cell phone. I'm an ex-communication engineer. That was my previous life. If you will, I used to work for Motorola. So we know a lot about these neat little devices we all carry around in our pocket now. You know, and if I'm live, I'll ask the audience, well, how does my voice or the picture get from here to the cell tower? You know, and most will say, oh, it's magic. You know, I hear that a lot. But quite literally, we are using electromagnetic fields as carriers of information. You know, the voice, the cell, I mean, the picture we just took, whatever that we're sending. But we all know phones work inside, right? We can be in an elevator and still make a phone call. Well, that's the magnetic field that goes through things that carries that information. So same thing in the body. We have the current flows we can measure. Magnetic fields are produced, basic physics. And the magnetic component easily penetrates the tissues and out into the environment around us. So to measure that, we use a different device called a magnetometer, right? So we know that the heart's magnetic field extends many feet out into the around the body, which we can think of as your personal field environment. Now, I'm not talking about an aura here necessarily. And how do I know this? Well, we can measure it, right? This is something we can take very standard devices, sensitive devices, and measure. And I'll show you in the next slide, we can actually measure the information being carried by the field of the heart. Okay. And that for sure is carrying information about our emotional states, probably a lot of other things that we haven't yet been able to prove. So these vibrational patterns are literally reflecting our attitudes, our emotions, and so on. And then a number of studies have shown how that can measurably affect others in our environment. Okay. So we're literally broadcasting our emotion. In fact, we can measure the field and tell with about 75% accuracy what somebody's emotional state is. Okay, just by looking at these patterns of information like you see here. Now, I'm not going to go into the scientific detail here. I'd lose most people and just confuse things. But these are called, in fact, this is the same techniques I've used to decode the information being carried by an electromagnetic wave from our phone or a transmitter of some kind. So these are vibrational, literally vibrational patterns. So you can see here what appreciation, when we're feeling appreciation, that pattern tends to look like versus anger. Now, actually appreciation is a more coherent signal, which cuts through the noise. But the main point here is they're different. And these things, they change in real time as we change our emotional state. So hopefully that makes some sense here. kind of confirming what I think most people know all along. I've always known what we feel inside isn't just contained inside of us. It literally has effects externally that we can now measure. You know, we have sayings in our language, you know, the tension was so thick in the room, you could cut it with a knife, right? These types of things. It's in our language. We all have an intuitive knowingness of this. Now in the social kind of space, this is one of the pretty well confirmed now mediators of how we can literally get in sync with each other. And this is just some, I won't spend a lot of time here, data showing heart-to-heart synchronization. So on the far right are what we call spectrums. We see the frequencies of the heart's rhythms. And this, I won't go into all the details here. It's a study where people were actually getting in the heart coherent state, like coherence looks like, and sending actually love and appreciation to each other. In this case, it was a pairwise 20 people specifically trying to connect with one other particular person in that room. And we see an incredible degree of synchronization. I mean, this is, before we had done this research, I would never thought this possible to see this level of heart-to-heart synchronization. And what's really kind of amazing is we're even starting to see this non-locally now with some new apps we've developed that allow us to measure the time-synchronized data from people anywhere in the world. Anyway, that's a whole hour presentation just to delve into that, which I won't do today because we're going to talk about the Global Coherence Initiative. And these are just some of the high level kind of, they're not really hypotheses. Well, some of them are, but the first one is that the fact is that Earth is bathed in a number of complex magnetic fields. We just are, we live in a sea of them. And even the Earth is within the sun's magnetic field. You know, so it's fields within fields. And these fields connect every living organism on the planet, including us. We can't escape it. Even if you're in the space station, you're still in the Earth's field or in the solar field. So basically what I'm saying here is we're all living in this common vibrational background field, but we're also contributing to the field, our own positive, negative vibrations based on our thoughts and feelings and how we're interacting with others. So if that's all true, what I'm suggesting here is that when large number of people come together, especially in coherent heart-centered states of things like love, compassion, kindness, we literally radiate a more coherent signal into the larger field environment that can help lift and offset the current, what I would suggest are planetary stress waves of stress and fear and incoherence. So that's just kind of a background to where we're going. And it's going to all sound kind of, you know, woo-woo, but guess what? We're scientists here, and we actually have some data to support what I'm saying here. So our mission at GCI is basically we're a very collaborative group. We have lots of collaborators around the world. But a big part of GCI is bringing the people together to add coherence to the global field environment. A big community of that, so I won't go. That's an important part because without the people, we can't do the science, right? Actually doing this. But basically, it's really about uniting us in heart-centered focus, love, care, and compassion, and feeding the field to really help lift global consciousness and facilitate the global shift. Okay, so just some quick backgrounds here. There's hundreds of studies that have been done on the effects of living in the rhythms of the Earth's magnetic field. Literally stacks, you know, feet high. We know, for example, that the activity in our brain and nervous system is affected in a measurable way with changes in the background fields we live in, how well we perform, our blood pressure, hormones, heart rate, even the number of traffic accidents and the tickets that get written kind of are modulated by the activity of the field. It goes on and on. And these are just some well-established ones. Hospital admissions, not just for heart attacks and strokes, but a wide range of things, especially mental, emotional things like depression, panic are modulated. Okay, so a little history here. I think this is really good for people to start. This is Alexander Chesovsky, who was a Russian astrophysicist. And he had the, maybe it was good luck, but I would say bad luck of getting drafted into World War I. And so being an astrophysicist, he was kind of keeping an eye on what the sun was doing. And what he observed is it occurred to him that when there was a lot of solar activity, solar flares and sunspots and things, people down on Earth just kind of got stupid, right? Crazier battles and things like this. Just got him intrigued. So after the war, he did an exhaustive study of human history. And it's really kind of amazing what people did back then and how much work it took compared to, you know, today's world with, you know, internet searches and things. This slide is his, from his original data. So I'm going to start with the blue line on the left on the top graph. We're starting in the year 1749. And this is, he went back to that year because that's how long we had solar data on at that time, records. And then it wraps around on the bottom graph to 1926 when he first published this work. What's being plotted in the blue line is a dot, basically, for every year from 1749 to 1926, indicating the number of major human events that occurred on Earth that year. Okay, big things. These are like start of a war, revolutions, major things that had global impact, basically. Okay. The red line on the bottom is the solar cycle for the same time period. Okay, which is about a 10 and a half to 11 year cycle. So you think there might be a correlation there. I'm looking at these graphs. I mean, you can almost overlay them directly. Now, of course, this, you know, well, this wasn't popular back then when he published this, the idea that we'd be influenced by these external factors and things. And in fact, he was nominated for a Nobel Prize, which he couldn't go to because of Russia not liking this. And that's a whole sub story. And this has been confirmed many times over and brought into modern times. And in fact, we see 9/11 was right at the peak of one, the Arab Spring right at the peak of the next cycle, and so on. Now, a bit later, after ice core data and things were available to get the solar cycle even farther back, another fellow did another analysis and found that the onset of war of all of recorded human history started at a very narrow peak around the peaks of these solar cycles. Now, even Chesovsky, remember, this is in the 1920s. So things like X-rays and UV, none of this was known or even conceived of at this time. And based on his measurement of people and their physiology, he actually said there has to be some unknown radiation from the sun affecting us, because it would of how fast the physiology was changing. Now, a bit later, another group did a similar analysis. And what they found it during these exact same time periods, you know, where you have the most onsets of war and so on, 80%, in fact, of war started in around those peaks. But those are also the greatest periods of human flourishing. And I really need to underline this, because it's not that the sun's out to get us or something, or the solar activity. This is, you know, where the, and this is global, and societies that don't know each other, you know, these types of things historically. So this is when we, the way I would invite you to think of this, and what we now know literally is that during the peaks of the solar cycle, the sun is emitting more energy, right? In the UV and these other spectrums that we didn't know about back in the 1920s. So these are energy influxes to the planet, literally, and into the magnetic fields of the Earth, and then down into human physiology. So it really gets down to how mature are we, how self-regulated are we on how we use that energy, how we utilize it, what we do with it. Because it's unconscious. People aren't aware of what's going on, right? So I did a similar presentation in Saudi Arabia a few years ago, back before COVID, and was talking about this. And the guy stands up in the middle of my lecture and says, wait a minute, why can't we just lock up all the politicians during this period around the solar peaks? Right, because that's when all the wars get started, right? Good point, right? So you get my drift here, hopefully. The immaturity, right? You go start wars if you're in a position of power. But if you're regular people, it shows up in mental emotional things, and we get in more arguments and disagreements. Or if we're more mature and self-regulated, we develop new collaborations, invent new things, flourish, take that energy that way. So anyway, that's kind of a more slower global cycle that we all live in. So to do research, we have to measure things. So we've created what's called the Global Coherence Monitoring System. And trust me, I wish we didn't have to do this ourselves. It's very expensive and very time consuming. This is a global network of ultra sensitive magnetometers and some other devices that are designed specifically to measure the resonant frequencies and the changes in Earth's magnetic fields. And we had to do that. There's lots of magnetometers out there, but they're very different. They're to measure the magnitude and the ripple to protect satellites and power grids and things. but they're not relevant. They don't give us the data that are relevant for humans, which I'll hopefully cover. So we currently have sites around the world that are all time synchronized, and this is the Global Coherence Monitoring System. This is what the one here in Boulder Creek, California looks like. The magnetometers themselves are underground, and these are some of the most sensitive magnetometers in the world, specifically designed for the frequencies of interest. But we also have them in places like Saudi Arabia and Lithuania and South Africa and New Zealand and Canada and so on. So one of the energetic systems, as I like to think of them, or magnetic fields that we're interested in here of Earth, is the geomagnetic field. And everybody knows what the geomagnetic field is, hopefully. Good thing we have one. It's what protects Earth from solar wind and radiations. Without it, Earth would turn into Mars very quickly. So all the atmosphere would be blown away and water and so on. So at least life as we know it would not be possible without it. So these little white lines represent, kind of an idealized version. It's a little bit more complex, but of what the magnetic field looks like. You know, this is the north-south pole thing our compasses tune into, right? When we go out and navigate. So I'd like you to time travel back to science class, back in probably junior high or somewhere in there. When you got to diet, most of you hopefully got to dump iron filings on a glass plate and you stick a magnet under it. Remember that? Hopefully. You know how they kind of magically dance around and show you the shape of whatever your magnet was that you happen to have? Well, recall that those iron filings lined up in lines, right? It wasn't just homogeneous black blob. They're literally lines, and those are magnetic field lines, literally, or flux lines, as we call them. So here's the kind of interesting thing that didn't teach me back then anyway, I had to learn later, is that those magnetic field lines literally can be plucked and they vibrate, just like a guitar string. So these are technically called field line resonances when we're talking about Earth's magnetic fields. So Earth's magnetic fields vibrate and these field line resonances. And what's plucking them is the solar wind rushing by. So on a nice quiet day, the solar wind is traveling about 1,000,000 miles per hour, right? And it's strong enough, it pushes in the field on the daytime stuff we learned back in science class, right? And then stretches it out on the nighttime side. And if you're like me, you quickly forgot and had to relearn it. But meanwhile, Earth is turning, so is the sun. So you have this complex interplay. And the vibrating the field lines. Now, here's what's really cool. This is pretty new data. So NASA has sent up 5 new satellites in low orbit, specifically to study and visualize the Earth's magnetic field. Okay, so the image you're seeing now, the little white dot in the center is Earth. So this is not an artistic thing. This is actual data from these satellites showing us the complexity, actual true complexity of Earth's field. And you can actually see the ringing of the magnetic field here. Pretty cool, huh? So we're living in this vibrational field with these field line resonances. Now, when we measure them down on Earth here with our monitoring system, which is designed to measure resonant frequencies, one of the primary resonant frequencies, these are very long field lines, so they have a low frequency, is a frequency called 0.1 hertz, okay? But there's a whole range of them. And they all overlap human heart rhythms, nervous system rhythms, and so on. 0.1 hertz, which is one of the primary ones, not always there, but we see it pop out a lot of times, is exactly the same frequency as the coherent human heart rhythm when we're in a coherent state. And we go naturally into this more coherent rhythm when we're actually feeling things, when we're feeling good. You walk out the door in the morning, that beautiful day, and you go, oh God, what a beautiful day. And you have that feeling, you're probably in a coherent state, right? So it's more about emotions, things like appreciation, gratitude, and love and kindness that naturally takes us into coherence. Okay, so there's a second set of magnetic rhythms. And there's a lot of misinformation, by the way, and confusion out in the social media around this these days. These are called Schumann resonances. And they were named after a German mathematician, Schumann, Otto Schumann, who mathematically predicted their existence, so they got named after them. But these are a completely different mechanism than what I just talked about with the field lines resonating. And they're a much smaller amplitude, magnetically speaking, okay? So these are magnetic waves that are traveling around the surface of the Earth, between the Earth and the bottom of the ionosphere. So if you're not familiar with the ionosphere, it's also necessary for life on Earth. Think of it as a big soap bubble around the planet. And it's a layer of highly ionized layer of the atmosphere. It's called plasma, actually, the fourth state of matter in physics. And plasmas have some pretty special properties, especially when they're interacting with magnetic fields. We won't go into all that today, but one of those is that they act like a mirror to magnetic waves. They bounce off of them. So if you're familiar with ham radio operators, tell how that works. You send your radio wave up, it hits the ionosphere, bounces off. And that's how somebody in the US is talking to people in England or China and so on. Or if you get a second bounce, they live for that. Then you're talking to people in Australia and New Zealand and South Africa and so on. Okay, so there are 8 Schumann resonances. A lot of people don't know that. There's always been 8. The first one is 7.83 hertz. And these were first measured in 1960. So this is relatively new science, and there's still a lot to be understood about these things. So immediately that people put it together, 7.8 hertz, well, that's the same frequency as our brain waves. You know what some people would call low alpha, but it's actually kind of right in that transition point between theta and alpha in really important brainwave state. Well, as it turns out, all 8 Schumann resonances are the same frequency as human brain waves. Okay. So what have I just said? Earth's 2 primary magnetic rhythms that are always there are vibrating at the same frequency as our hearts and brains. Oh, and by the way, when we measure magnetic fields from the body, you can, as I said, measure the magnetic fields from the heart feet away from the body with magnetometers. The same instrument, you can measure a brain wave about an inch away. So the heart's clearly the big player, and we're talking energetically and magnetically. Now, not that this means anything, but it's almost the same ratio for Earth. So the field line resonances, which are the same as the heart, are huge compared to the Schumann resonances, which are tiny, kind of almost the same ratio, feet versus inch, if that makes sense. Okay, so back to science class for a minute. Most people got to play with tuning forks, or at least seen, you know, heard about tuning forks and resonance and all that. You know, you tap one tuning fork, and if the other tuning fork is the same frequency, it starts to magically vibrate. Which is, by the way, they didn't teach us back then that tuning forks are coherent systems. No coherence, no resonance. You have to have coherent systems to set up resonance. So in our tuning fork example, which is an experiment, it's really more accurately called resonant coupling, shows that we can transfer energy and information between systems that vibrate at the same frequency, right? What that basically is demonstrating. So in a case of our tuning forks, you have air molecules that are mediating the energy between them, you know, vibrating the air, just like my voice is now under the microphone and so on. Well, it works the same way with magnetic fields. You just don't need the air molecules. Right. So if you think about it, whoever's listening now, how many vibrating invisible magnetic fields are in the area around you right now? How many cell phone conversations are going on? Radio stations, TV stations, et cetera, et cetera. They're all there. So we pick up our phone. How does it know which one to get, right, to couple? Well, we quite literally tune the receiver in this case to be the same resonant frequency as the wave of it that we're interested in. And as soon as you do that, you quickly and easily transfer the energy and information into your phone and amplify it for having your conversation. Okay, so we know a lot about this in electronics and electromagnetics. But what I'm really saying here is our hearts and brains are vibrating at the same frequency as Earth. So we have the basic physics to understand how we are coupled to and in transmitting information both ways between the fields of the Earth. Hope I'm making sense so far. So this is, I'm just gonna take you through a couple of experiments here briefly. This was a study that kind of changed everything in a certain way. It was a relatively small study. And it was a group of people who were wearing devices, actually look like this. I happen to have one laying here, that you put across your chest and measure the electrocardiogram and your what's called heart rate variability, the beat-to-beat change in heart rate, 24 hours a day. So they wore these devices 24/7 for 30 days. Okay, very long study, group of people. Now here's the interesting thing. Some of these people that were part of this study were they're located radically hundreds of miles apart. So some were literally in Southern California, some in Central, some in North. That a lot of them didn't know each other. They're just going about their normal activity, normal days for over this 30-day period. And the original intention of the study was to look at the correlation between changes in the, you know, solar and magnetic fields and our physiology, because heart rate variability, it's called, reflects the dynamics occurring in our nervous system. And lots, this is all published, by the way, lots of correlations and stuff. But the surprise came when we time synchronized the data from this group of people and just averaged it together. I'm not even sure why we did it, but we did. Expecting to see a noisy, flat kind of line, because why in the world would the beat-to-beat change in my heart rate have anything to do with somebody hundreds of miles away? Okay. So the black, there's two different HRV things here, but just look at the black trace. That is the group's HRV, time synchronized averaged HRV, as far from this kind of noisy flat line. What this is telling us is that these heart rhythms of this group of people were literally synchronized. So the only thing we can finally come up to explain this, actually one of our own hypotheses, it's kind of embarrassing to admit that, and it wasn't immediately obvious, was if this group was synchronizing to the rhythms in the Earth's field that they were all exposed to. So they're all in California in this case. So the red line is the red power of the resonant frequencies of the magnetic field during that same time period. So again, you can see the correlations, and on the far right of the spectrum showing that these are exactly the same frequency. So this was suggesting that people are synchronizing at this slow wave rhythm to each other and the Earth. And we, you know, spent about 6 months trying to make this go away because it was almost too unbelievable. Couldn't do that. So we did publish, this is all published. But, you know, this is California, relatively small group. Figured we better replicate this, you know, and we wanted to extend it to ask the question, is this happening globally? So we were able to get some funding and do a much larger study with groups of 20 people in each group in five countries. So this is just some of the group members. So we had a group in Lithuania, New Zealand, Saudi Arabia, California, and actually one in England as well. It's a little more complex, but here's the essence of what we found. So if we look at the left-hand graph here, the black line is the magnetic field power, the strength of the resonant frequencies, think of it that way, of the Schumann resonances. The blue line is people from these groups around the world synchronized, averaged together. So what we see here is an almost unbelievable, again, degree of synchronization between our hearts and the Earth and it with each other. And these people are in some cases are in radically different time zones. They're on the opposite sides of the planet, right? So in other words, we've replicated this at a global level. And the graph on the right side is the same thing, only now we're looking at the field line resonances, right? That I talked about, the two different mechanisms. So we see that our hearts, and it gets a little more complex than this, but you get the gist, right? Amazing degrees of synchronization between humanity and the Earth. So this is showing, I would never have predicted I wouldn't have thought possible, let alone to see this kind of data and it being replicated in multiple studies now. Now, in the middle of this second study with these five groups, we organized that kind of in the middle of it, that we would do what's called a heart lock-in, which is one of the heart math techniques, or kind of a heart meditation technique, where you get coherent and you radiate that feeling to other yourself and others and so on. And now here we're looking at the individuals, in this case, the Lithuanian group, and their degree of synchronization with the Earth's field. So the graph on the left is the day, in this case, the day before that we did this experiment, where all the groups did this at the same time. And the graph on the right is at the individual level, the synchronization with the Earth's field over the next 24 hours after being in a coherent heart state for only 15 minutes. Okay, so we know being coherent synchronizes us in our own system. And as I showed you earlier, with others, now here we're seeing with the Earth itself. So just being coherent for 15 minutes had a carryover over the next 24 hours of being more in sync with the Earth. Okay, now all the groups look just like this. I'm not going to bore you with all the graphs of all the groups. They all look the same. Okay. So I hope you get my drift here. And by the way, multiple studies and new generation of research into this is starting to show that it's a really good thing to be in sync with others and the earth, right? It's a type of energy source. Again, we could do a whole other presentation just on some of the things I'm just quickly mentioning here. Now, coming close to wrapping up, we'll do some questions, but another project that some of you will be familiar with is called the Global Consciousness Project. It's started by Roger Nelson at Princeton about 22 years ago. And this is a long running project. It's a, think of it as this global scientific instrument of basically physical devices that make random numbers that are globally distributed. And what he's found is that when some event on Earth triggers a large outpouring, a large number of people to feel something, and it is emotion, mental intention doesn't seem to do much, that when we feel a large number of people feel something, this whole global network of devices, physical devices, changes their behavior. And they stop being as random. A coherence is added to them. And that's called the Global Consciousness Project. Now, many, many events have been studied, and the statistics on this are like trillions to one. I mean, that's a very strong finding. My favorite study that he's done, and Roger's too, he would tell you, is he took this after they had a bunch, you know, many, many events, and had them, several different people, rate them for their level of love and compassion. So things like we just had Global Peace Day, earlier this month, right, on the 21st. And this is our 21st year of that. So that would be an example of an event in high love and compassion. But there's lots of global meditations and different events around the world that are similar and have a lot of love and compassion. The medium column is events that create a lot of emotion, but don't have a lot of love and compassion. So this would be like a Super Bowl game, World Cup games, you know, big sporting events, a lot of emotion, but not necessarily a lot of, you know, positive type connections going on. Low would be the reactions. After a school shooting or terrorist events, where there's more fear and anxiety and so on. And then he reanalyzed the data according to these events. And what he saw there was, what you can see here, this is his actual data, is that the events invoking a lot of love and compassion had by far a significantly greater impact on, as measured by this global measurement system. Pretty cool, I think, because it really helps confirm what I'm suggesting here, is that when we're more loving, caring, kind, we're more coherent measurably. We create a more coherent field that we can measure, becomes more coherent. We know that coherence increases coupling to the larger field, right? As I've been kind of describing here. And so this is another independent way of measuring a similar effect. And by the way, we are here at the HeartMath Institute in the process of taking over the Global Consciousness Project. Dr. Nelson's retiring and asked us to take it over. So we're creating a new version called GCP 2.0. We're well into that now. And so this will be a new generation of a citizen scientist project that will allow a lot more people to get involved and host one of these devices. We want to get at least 1,000 of them around the planet here probably next year. So anybody that's interested in that, you can shoot an email to info@heartmath and let me know, and we'll get you on the list to be a potential citizen scientist. So basically my main message here, I'm not quite done, but close to ending this. I really would invite people to pause throughout the day and ask yourself, what am I feeding the field? How much of it is really kindness, compassion, cooperation versus frustration, impatience, anxiety, fear? Because it all counts. We're all feeding the field. It doesn't matter what your station in life is or how much money you make. We're all coupled and all always feeding the field. And it's wonderful when we come together and do global meditations and these practices. But guess what? What about the other, you know, days of the week and month? Because it all counts. So I truly believe we're at a point in the history of consciousness where we have the chance to evolve into basically it's what the shift is that everybody's talking about. It's a shift in consciousness. And one of the hallmarks of that is a more cooperative and compassionate way of being, a more heart-based approach to life. So I would invite you to join with thousands of others in considering what you're feeding the field. And if you want to get involved in a great way to get involved in a global coherence initiative is a relatively new app called the Global Coherence app. It's a free app. You can go to either the Apple Store or the Android Google Play Store and download it and register. And this app is designed to measure not only your personal coherence, but the group's coherence, the global group. So we have regular events. We're actually partnering a lot with people like Unify and different other groups and Global Meditations. A lot of different organizations are using the app now to measure your personal and the group's level of coherence and track how much coherent heart energy we're feeding the field. And one of the cool features, why it's so popular, is little dots show up on the global map, showing you who's there with you right now doing the same thing that you can connect with. And then we can track that over time. And so this is gonna enable a whole new generation of research as well. And you don't have to have a sensor to use it, but it helps if you wanna really measure your coherence. So we have a couple different sensors that work with it. If you really actually wanna measure your actual heart rate variability and how coherent it is. But even without that, you can still show up on the map and there are guided meditations for synchronized events. And otherwise, so I would certainly invite anybody that's listening that wants to participate to download the app and sign up. So with that, I'm done for today. So I hope this has been an enjoyable and useful conversation. And if there are any questions, we can, I think we have a few minutes, we can delve into some.
Yes, thank you so much, Doctor. The chat was just exploding with revelations and things that people said about how they were affected during the talk. Cool. So there are a bunch of questions as well. Would you like to jump into a few questions?
Yeah, sure. I'm not able to see chat, so I'll let you summarize them and tell me what they are here. So
okay,
excellent. Let me stop sharing. That way we can have a bigger screen here. And
okay.
Yeah. Oh, now I can see chat when I stop sharing. Cool.
Yeah, everyone was very touched, very impressed by the talk, Doctor. Thank you very much for that, first of all. And I'll try to get through as many questions as I can. Everyone, please go to the Q&A and vote the questions that you want to the top, because I think we have more than we are going to be able to get through. So vote them up. I'll read them and we'll get through as many as possible. All right, let's see. The number one, Jay asks, are there any concerns about the 5G satellites going into the ionosphere and affecting the frequencies? He said, okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, go finish the question, sorry.
He just said that he had heard concerns about migratory animals using the Earth's magnetic field that would be affected and wondered if that would also affect us.
Yeah, I don't know is the real answer. And I'm probably a little biased here as an ex-communications engineer on this. And so from I didn't talk to it, but one of the studies we did is where people wore these recorders I was talking about for 5 months. Okay, a long, very long study. And then we were able to do what's called signal averaging, where you see multiple changes in different solar and Earth things. And a very new perspective, I'm going to just riff a little bit on this, came out of that study that's in line with a lot of other studies that I kind of alluded to. So one of the things that, well, there were several things. One is that's most relevant to this question is the sun actually emits a microwave frequency, 2.8 gigahertz, called the F107 and solar radio flux. It's doing it right now. It always does it. It actually goes along with the same similar rhythms of the solar cycles. And that's the same frequency as Wi-Fi, right? So the amount of radiation that we walk around in natural radiation, kind of tacos, a lot of the man-made stuff. Now, granted, it doesn't have the same digital, you know, what we do know though in the field, and I have friends that have been researching the topic of, you know, like 60 hertz and 50 hertz and cell phone type emissions and things on biological systems for many years. There haven't been a lot of strong effects. One of them, probably the most famous guys who's passed away now, got a name named Ross 80, quite some time ago, actually in the 70s and 80s, did some really elegant work. And what he showed that biological systems have what he called windows that are very specific. Some of you might know his work if you're in the bioelectromagnetic medicine field, it's pretty famous. But it was really important because what he showed that there can be strong nonlinear biological responses two external magnetic fields. But they're only very narrow windows. They have to be the right frequency and the right amplitude both to have those effects. Other than that, they really you couldn't see any effects. Now, what's interesting is it turns out those windows tend to be the same windows of what we naturally generate biologically. So we are attuned to and sensitive to the same fields we generate. Okay. So, which are quite different than a lot of the, and I'm not promoting and saying that 5G is not harmful. Don't get me wrong here. I don't know. But some of the, I will say fear mongering that I saw, and I was asked to sign some of the petitions about against 5G that were originally written. And they're going to destroy the ionosphere and all this utter nonsense. It's just not true. I'm not saying that there won't be health hacks. I don't know. But that's probably a more honest answer, you know, and the same thing that was, years ago, that was all about HARP and HARP's destroying the ionosphere and mind control. Well, no, it wasn't. HARP was a program that heated up a very small part of the ionosphere, just from radiation, which is, you know, probably a billionth of the effect of what the sun does every moment, you know, so they could bounce a low frequency radio wave off and, you know, track, you know, talk to submarines. That's what HARP was about. I mean, that was started at Stanford. I mean, it was all public domain if you cared to look about it, what it was really about. So I'm probably going off here more than I should. But.
Oh, excellent. Thank you, doctor. Our next most popular question is, how about solar minimums? Are there correlations with what happens at those times? And Jay points out that we were at a solar minimum this summer.
Yeah, well, not just a summer. It was actually a long solar minimum, kind of an unusually long minimum period between this cycle 25 that started now. Interesting. There's correlation between maxa and minima, you know, and typically, you know, behaviorally speaking, you know, like when I showed you Chesovsky data, that's when there's less, you know, starts of wars and crazy things like that going on because during the minimums. Now, there's also a group, and I'm not saying right or wrong here, but some interesting correlational data that's looked at pandemics over the, you know, past centuries. And they find a correlation that global pandemics, which we happen to be in the middle of one right now, tends to be correlated with solar minimums. So, and then they have some theoretical reasons for why that might be, but.
Okay, outstanding. Let's get to another one, doctor. Can we do another?
Sure.
Okay. Cameron has asked, can you synchronize with someone not in your immediate vicinity?
Yes.
Yeah, I think maybe she means a specific person.
Yes. Yes, you can. And that's I alluded to that earlier about the non-local when I went through so much so quickly that like I said almost every topic I touched on is worthy of an hour probably discussion. But this is pretty new work. And again, I'm surprised. I've got to quit having expected hypothesis because if I just am neutral, I find things come out better than if I would have magically designed the results, right? In fact, a colleague of mine in the UK is really ahead of us a little bit on this, looking at non-local heart rate variability synchronization. We're doing it as well now and starting some new studies, but what he's finding, here's the amazing part. Well, we already know from our work and some others as well that to see synchronization, two things are really helpful. One is almost essential, and that is that there's a positive emotional bond between the pair. You have to like each other, okay, for non-local synchronization. If I'll work with you, but I don't like you, you're not going to see it most likely. And if you're able to maintain a coherent rhythm, that also helps facilitate it. So he's been able to show that in bonded pairs, couples, primarily Peter's work, Peter Granger's his name, that non-local synchronization can happen and distance doesn't seem to matter. It can be hundreds, thousands of miles. Now, here's the crazy part. And we haven't replicated this yet, but he does good work. I believe him, is that it works even when one of the pair, if you're looking at a pair, even when one of the pair members doesn't know you're doing the experiment. In other words, like a wife or a husband is really tuning into and sending love to their partner, they will synchronize even if the other doesn't know it's happening. So yeah, I want to verify this ourselves and get it published, but I mean, he has published some of this at a conference, but we're more interconnected in these ways. And what I'm actually suggesting, we don't have to go to quantum level stuff. If we really are all connected to the big field, this is plausible to understand how this is actually happening, or how moms know that their kids are up to no good on the other side of the planet, right? Because we're all in the field, right? And we're all feeding the information in. And what we care about, who we care about, is what tunes us. Like in our radio receiver, I mentioned how you got to tune it to the frequency of interest. Well, what we care about is what tunes our physiological systems to the frequency of interest. I mean, moms pick up information on their kids, not the other billion or so kids on the planet. What a miss that would be, right?
Oh, doctor, that is fascinating. This is all so fascinating. Thank you so, so much for this talk and for all of your work. I hope you get to see the chat and see how much you touched people with this talk. I'm sorry we can't get to any more questions right now, but please continue the conversation with us. We're going to drop all of the links into the chat for everybody so that you can continue. Many people have asked, doctor, how to work with you or how to help. And so we're going to put all that information into the chat. And we also want to invite everyone to join us in our coffee rooms, in our Facebook page, and of course, by the conference. This has been so amazing. I've learned so much just from this one session and hearing your research, Dr. pairs so well with some of the other sessions that we've had. It's amazing. And I do wanna note that the price doubles after the conference. So if you wanna get the conference, please get it now. Also, we wanna mention that if you are a trauma worker, we do have a special discount for you. Please make sure that you reach out to us for that. But we have come to our conclusion on time. Please, everybody, check out the chat for the links. And again, doctor, thank you from the deepest parts of us. And we would like you to take it home with your final piece of advice for us on how to live embodied.
Live from the heart. I mean that literally. Most of our work really is about what we call heart intelligence. And breathe through the heart, focus, and listen to what it has to tell you.
Thank you, doctor. You're a wonderful person. Thank you for this.
Great. Take care, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.